Let's look at Mr. Care and Worry himself. He joins us in the studio, as he does every year. Ian Bremmer is the chairman and founder of the Eurasia Group. His risks report, latest risks report, is out today for 2016. Ian, welcome.
I would not miss it.
Yes, thanks. Well, we do this every year. I'm wondering if any of those stories that we just heard, the markets in China, the Saudi Arabia-Iran business, even this radicalization out in Oregon, did any of that show up on your risk report?
Let's start with the good news. China didn't and China shouldn't, precisely because the market slowdown doesn't have a connection with the real Chinese economy. It's not an open market. You can't short it. And the Chinese government, as they've shown last year and they'll show this year, can intervene and will intervene politically massively to ensure that they don't have social instability on the back of all of this concern. But what we did write in this report, the China footprint is number three, and that is that the size of the Chinese market is so big and the impact of China has become so large that all of these perturbations that come, both negative and positive, have massive impact outside China. So it's not that Xi Jinping is under threat, but rather that we're going to see international markets rise and fall much more whipsawed this year by the surprises that come out of China, the negatives in terms of the markets, the positives in terms of the additional $1 trillion they'll spend outside of China in 2016.
The Saudi Arabia story comes in fifth, yes. I believe, in your assessment. Does it include this looming sectarian battle that seems to be framed in what's going on with China and or with Saudi Arabia and Iran right now?
Absolutely. And I mean, it's, you know, the first time that Saudi Arabia ever made it as a single risk in 16 years of putting these risks together in this report. Pretty much everything that could be going wrong for the Saudi kingdom is. They're running out of money. The oil prices are going to stay low. They are geopolitically, they've lost just about, sort of all of the allies they have in the region and more broadly. And the Iranians, their mortal enemy, are doing very well. We'll do even better on the back of this nuclear deal. Nuclear deal was, the Republicans didn't like it. The Israelis certainly despised it, but it was a mortal threat to the Saudis. And the Saudis have now decided to take matters into their own hands. That conflict with Iran is very serious, perhaps mostly because the Saudis don't have a lot of international support.
Do you see the Saudis trying to upscale their profile over ISIS, that is trying to take sort of leadership in the Sunni kind of radical world right now, the jihadist world right now? You've got ISIS and friends at number four on your risks.
We do. And it's precisely that ISIS has become this threat well beyond the Islamic State, where some territory has been taken back by U.S.-led coalition and others.
The Ramadi success,
I guess. Yes, but there have been a lot of failures, and failures against ISIS as an organization around the region and in Europe has become a bigger threat, will become a bigger threat. And what these are very interlinked risks, right? Because it's very much the fact that the Saudis and the Iranians are going to be fighting each other tooth and nail means your ability to coordinate in responding to ISIS, your ability to coordinate in trying to create some kind of stability after 5 years of war in Syria is virtually zero. And that plays out to instability not just across the Middle East, but targeting right at the heart of Europe.
You begin with two very big ideas. Your top risk is called the Hollow Alliance, and your second risk is Closed Europe. They're related in the sense that there's no longer a grouping of nations that has the ability to drive world events in the way that we understood during the Cold War and in the immediate aftermath of the Cold War. And Europe, in your number two risk here, seems to be an isolated entity spinning off in its own world. What do you see that means to the rest of the world?
Well, so if you look at the headlines today, Saudi Arabia and Iran, where is the United States in Europe? They're bystanders. They're on the sidelines. They're not coordinated and they don't think it's really their problem. And while I don't think that the U.S. elections are going to be a big issue for the U.S. markets and for investors and CEOs who think about, you know, the strength of the U.S. economy, my God, it matters for U.S. leadership internationally. The Americans are turning inward. They don't want to do this stuff anymore. The transatlantic relationship, which has been the most important alliance in the world for the last three quarters of a century, is nowhere on the agendas of anyone running for president on either the Democratic or the Republican side. Where when we look at the Europeans, we have them cutting their own relationships, whether it's the Brits with the Chinese because they desperately need some cash, or whether it's the French with the Russians because they want someone that's going to take a military role in the Middle East, in Syria in particular, or whether it's Germany and Turkey because they want someone to do something about the refugee issue. And all three of those countries, the three most important European allies of the United States, look across the Atlantic and they see the Americans lacking.
Americans weaker, Merkel weaker.
Weaker.
That's your definite takeaway there. Number 8 and number 10, Brazil and Turkey. And people have been predicting the demise of Brazil for decades. Hasn't happened yet. What's your risk in Brazil? And how do you see Turkey being torn apart by what's going on in the conflicts you've already mentioned?
Brazil's not getting torn apart. It's not going to fall apart. But 2016 is going to be a very bad year, right? Because this, we still have to work our way through the impeachment process of Dilma Rousseff, the president. We don't think she'll ultimately be impeached, but it's going to be nasty and fractious. And everyone around her and the former president, Lula, is going to be caught up in this extraordinary, unprecedented corruption scandal.
Oh, come on. It's the Olympics. There's a party in Rio. Come on. The whole world will come.
You know, I got to tell you, this is one I wouldn't show up for. Not because it's going to be so violent, but because they don't have the infrastructure, because the sites are far apart from each other. People are going to be sitting in traffic and not going to half of the places they have tickets for. If you're planning on Rio, this is not the year to get to Rio.
Right. Turkey and red herrings in your report, and then we'll go?
Well, Turkey is kind of – it's in the wrong place, and they've bet just about every geopolitically bad story they possibly could. Plus, they have a leader that doesn't back down ever, including on the Russians, which is now hitting them with sanctions. So it's going to be a bad year for Turkey. But the red herrings, right? A couple big stories here. Asian geopolitics, nowhere here. India-Pakistan looks better. China-Japan looks pretty stable. Even the South China Sea, you're going to have posturing, but these are countries that are focused on economics and focused long-term. So Asia, pretty separate from a lot of this geopolitical conflict. And the United States, as much as we talk about Trump, as what should we talk about, you know, a $10 billion two-year farce of a political campaign, the impact that actually has on the United States, virtually zero.
Dare we say a happy note there? Ian Bremmer, president and founder of Eurasia Group, thanks so much.
My pleasure, John.
You can find the risks at thetakeaway.org.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.